Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Good morning, Montana. You've got Jennifer Owen and Scott Aspenwetter filling in for the great Aaron Flint. This morning, we also have the pleasure of talking to U.S. Attorney Jesse Laslovich. Jesse has called in to talk a little bit about public safety across the state of Montana as we've been talking about that. Jesse, good morning. Do we got you on?
You have me, Scott. Good morning.
All right.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jesse. Hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to jump on with us this morning and talk a little bit about the work that you've been doing as as the U.S. attorney here for Montana. We've seen here over the last month some pretty high-level drug busts and drug ring cracks that you and your team and the drug task force have made across the state of Montana. Maybe you can just talk to the listeners a little bit about some of the most recent activity that you guys have seen and some of the successes you've had as you've been battling, the drug epidemic here in Montana.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Scott. So we have been quite successful over this past year, and particularly these last few months, busting up some of these drug rings that are poisoning our communities throughout the state. Most recently, I was in Great Falls last week, where we announced 10 people and indicted and all sentenced to federal prison for running a fentanyl distribution ring. I was on Blackfeet Reservation a couple weeks before that, announcing people that we had indicted and that we currently will be indicting. So that's not quite done in terms of the prosecution. It's more to come there, but important work on the reservation, which in my view didn't just have ripples across the other reservations, but rather waves, since these fentanyl and meth traffickers target the reservations. But of course, it's all over the state, not just the reservations. And then in Billings last year, our biggest by far was we indicted 27 people off of Crow in Northern Cheyenne, and then we had people in Billings as well, three different houses, all 27 people. Were pled guilty and then sentenced to federal prison. So really proud of that work too. But this, when I have these press conferences, Scott and Jennifer, it's never, hey, we're done, patting ourselves on the back. There's more work to be done, sadly, and we're committed to doing it. But we haven't done a good job of telling our story, and by we, I mean the federal government. So when we're able to wrap up these successful operations, it's important that people know what we're doing to hold people accountable.
That's fantastic, Jesse. We're going to take a real quick break and come back with a 7-minute segment here after the break. But we've got U.S. Attorney Jesse Laslovich on here in Billings talking about some of the work that he's doing fighting the drug epidemic across the state of Montana. And we're going to pick that back up. This is Montana Talks.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
In these days of culture wars, you commonly hear disdain for those who don't work.
Those who use the social safety net to maintain an acceptable lifestyle that doesn't involve holding a job are rarely respected, yet their behavior may be perfectly rational. That's because of something economists call implicit taxes. What, you may ask, does a person or family actually receive by earning an additional dollar of wages? Because of the myriad of cash supplement, housing assistance, child care subsidies, and other safety net programs out there that are income-based, the answer may surprise you. There are so many rules to all these programs. Social Security alone has 27-28 primary rules. That perhaps would make it more surprising if it were otherwise. The thresholds where earning an extra dollar incurs a penalty or puts you in a different rate bracket are incredibly harsh. Start making money and those implicit taxes add up to a lot. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Fox Facts.
Times Square in New York City will once again be filled with revelers ringing in the new year for the annual ball drop. The first New Year's Eve celebration in Times Square took place on December 31st, 1904, marking the opening of the New York Times new headquarters. The celebration featured a fireworks display, and the event was such a success that Times Square quickly became the new IT location to welcome in the new year, surpassing Trinity Church in Lower Manhattan. A few years later, the city banned fireworks, so the owner of the Times decided to replace the fireworks with a large illuminated ball. It was lowered from the tower flagpole at midnight on December 31st, 1907. Today, hundreds of thousands of people gather in the square, braving the cold to witness the iconic ball drop, making it one of the world's most famous New Year's Eve traditions. Matt Murphy, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back. We've got U.S. Attorney Jesse Lazlevich on the phone with us, and he was just talking about some of the big most recent successes that he and his team have had in the fight against drugs here in Montana. And Jesse, first of all, I want to appreciate. Thank you for your effort and your dedication. You've got a thankless job tackling a serious problem that is destroying communities in our state. And the effort and the tenacity in which you've approached that with is commendable on a minimum. But
it's refreshing, frankly. You know, Jesse, Scott and I were talking a little bit in the break about really the aggressiveness that you've brought as a prosecutor to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Tell us a little bit about stepping into that role and how you managed to kind of change the direction to really get serious about prosecuting, even in some of the most remote parts of the state.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate the comments. It's certainly been a team approach. When I started in the position, it was clear, especially as I talked to our federal, local, and state law enforcement partners about the need for our office to be more aggressive. There was frustration. I mean, work was being done, but there was frustration about the amount of prosecutions being done federally. So we've been intentional, and whether it be fair or unfair, right, at the time, of course, I can't speak to what was done before I arrived, other than what I was hearing from people. And so it was really intentional when we talk with folks that we need to be aggressive on these things, that our partner, our law enforcement partners are yearning for it. The communities we serve deserve it. And the federal government has a heavy hammer when it comes to sentences. I mean, with meth and fentanyl in particular, the amounts we can get mandatory 5 or 10 year prison sentences. And as I tell many people, we're not talking about addicts. There are some, of course, who are dealing drugs to fund their addiction. But we're talking about drug dealers who are just doing this to make a lot of money. And, of course, as you guys know, a lot of whom have direct or indirect connections to the two cartels in Mexico. So for me, you know, it's a temporary position. You have our partners who are doing the work, risking their lives to keep our community safer, saying we need more to be done at the prosecution level. Let's do it. Let's go. And so the team.
Yeah, Jesse, I know our own Attorney General, Austin Knutson, speaks very highly of the working relationship he has with you and your team and the successes that you've had in collaborating together with the DRJ forces here in Montana. One of the things that Councilwoman Owen was talking about earlier was just the collaboration. And I think we oftentimes forget what that collaboration looks like to handle these major issues, particularly around drugs and human trafficking that we see here in Montana. Can you talk a little bit about the partners that you're collaborating with as you're working through these cases?
Yeah, I really appreciate the question. People would be, I think, proud. Your listeners, people throughout the state, just to see, if they knew, of course, that they wouldn't know a lot of this is done in secret, but just in the collaborative efforts that are done throughout the law enforcement community. And people rightfully, I think immediately when they think of law enforcement, they're thinking of the Billings Police Department in Billings, the Yellowstone County Sheriff's Office, right? And they are so important to our work, and not just keeping Yellowstone County and Billings safe, but of course, working with us to bring these prosecutions. And that's the same with police departments and sheriff's offices across the state. And then, of course, you have Division of Criminal Investigation that falls under Attorney General Knutson's leadership. We work hand in hand with them. They are fantastic partners. And then we also have our tribal law enforcement partners. They're under-resourced. But we need them on the reservations for referrals to our federal partners, right? So the DEA and the FBI and the Marshals Service and ATF and Homeland Security, all those three-letter acronym agencies that aren't first responders, but then respond to these referrals and then get the referrals to our office for prosecution. But there's no turf. That's been really refreshing for me. It is, what is the best entity that can take the case, investigate it, and take the case where we can get the best sentence? If it's in state court, let's go with the state side. If it's in federal court, then we want to take it and be as aggressive as possible. So I really appreciate the question. That the collaboration has just been extraordinary to be able to see in these cases.
Absolutely. And I think in talking with our friend, Attorney General Knutson, I think he echoes that very same sentiment. I mean, your willingness, as Jennifer had noted, to be very aggressive about prosecution has been very refreshing for the state of Montana and for those in the law enforcement community. And I think it has helped create a safer communities across our state. Hey, Jesse, we've got a short break here. Can you stick around for one more segment with us?
You bet.
All right.
You betcha.
We're going to take a quick break. We've got U.S. Attorney Jesse Laslovich on, talking about criminal justice and the work he's doing across the state of Montana. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Montana Talks.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
In these days of culture wars, you commonly hear disdain for those who don't work. Those who use a social safety net to maintain an acceptable lifestyle that doesn't involve holding a job are rarely respected, yet their behavior may be perfectly rational. That's because of something economists call implicit taxes. What, we may ask, does a person or family actually receive by earning an additional dollar of wages? Because of the myriad of cash supplement, housing assistance, child care subsidies, and other safety net programs out there that are income-based, the answer may surprise you. There are so many rules to all these programs. Social Security alone has 27-28 primary rules. That perhaps would make it more surprising if it were otherwise. The thresholds where earning an extra dollar incurs a penalty or puts you in a different rate bracket are incredibly harsh. Start making money and those implicit taxes add up to a lot. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
This is Fox on Football. Week 16 of the NFL season brings a ton of quarterback changes, and none more notable than the Atlanta Falcons, who are benching veteran Kirk Cousins in favor of rookie Michael Penix Jr.
Cousins has struggled recently, but the 36-year-old is accepting the decision made by head coach Raheem Morris.
You know, there's a standard that you know, I have for myself, that the team has for me, that unfortunately, I wasn't playing up to that standard consistently enough.
The New York Giants have announced that they will be going back to Drew Lock to be their starter, who missed last week's game with a heel injury. Meanwhile, the Tennessee Titans will start Mason Rudolph on Sunday, as second-year quarterback Will Levis will head to the bench. And the Cleveland Browns are going with Dorian Thompson-Robinson to start Sunday in place of Jameis Winston. For the latest NFL news, go to foxsports.com. For Fox on Football, Tony Genualdo, Fox News.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals. But I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper at gradsoflife.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
Much confusion across the countryside and for small business owners. That's all because a court has ruled that the Corporate Transparency Act reporting requirements are back on the table. Small businesses, including farms and ranches, will have to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act filing requirements as they are back in effect following a court decision that reversed the injunction that previously halted the mandate that occurred on Monday. The Fifth Court of Appeals this week lifted the nationwide preliminary injunction on the enforcement of the Corporate Transparency Act, holding that the government is likely to prevail in a constitutional challenge. The decision places many small businesses in jeopardy that have not yet filed beneficial ownership information with the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, a division of the U.S. Department of the Treasury. In light of the Fifth Circuit's decision, FinCEN announced it will likely delay enforcement of the Corporate Transparency Act until January 13th of 2025, which is just 3 weeks away from now. Business owners are encouraged to contact tax and legal advisors with any questions that they may have now that that injunction has been lifted and the Corporate Transparency Act reporting requirements are now again in effect. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we're back with U.S. Attorney Jesse Laslovich. You've got Scott Aspenlighter and Jennifer Owen filling in for Aaron Flint, who's on vacation. But let's get back to some of the work that the U.S. Attorney is doing here in Montana and keeping our community safe. And you know, one of the things that's very important and near and dear to Jennifer and I's hearts are the work that's being done around domestic violence.
That's right.
It's a uncomfortable topic mm-hmm. to talk about. And I think in Montana, we have shied away from having that conversation in the public for far too long, but it's starting to be a conversation that we're having. And Jesse, the work that you've been doing, particularly on the reservations around domestic violence, is something I think is also worth noting.
I think it's really been incredible. You know, we know here in Billings that on average, about half of our assaults in the community are family violence related. We're victimizing women, victimizing children. And Jesse, you and I testified at a legislative interim committee hearing over the summer in which I sort of highlighted some of the struggles and some of the work that we've done here at the local level on family violence. And when we talked before the break about partnerships, I really appreciated you grabbing me after that and saying, you know, the U.S. attorney can be a partner in addressing domestic violence and the victimization of women and children around the state. Could you talk a little bit about the work you're doing in that area?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, Jennifer. I appreciate your work in this this important area. One thing, I think there are many aspects about the job that have sort of knocked me over, but none more than the violence in Indian country, domestic violence in particular. And of course, as you guys know, for us, we are the only game in town when it comes to prosecuting felonies on six of our seven reservations, and something we take seriously. No greater obligation, I think, than to protect kids and women, people who are vulnerable, and so have been quite aggressive in prosecuting those people who are victimizing others in the home. Far too much of it happening in Indian country, and then of course off the reservations too. To your point, Jennifer, one thing I told the County Attorneys Association, and I met with the Montana Sheriffs and Peace Officers about a month ago at their annual meeting and told them we can be a resource for folks, because it's not just in Billings, Jennifer, with half of the, you know, criminal cases involving domestic violence. We hear that across the state and the communities, but they should think of us, particularly if a gun is used by those who are committing the violence. There's a federal law that allows us to get involved if they're using a gun, and so we've had some of those cases that have been referred to us off the reservation, that, you know, where we want to avoid someone, of course, being killed. So yes, really important work. It feels like we're not making progress. I know work is being done, of course. There's so much of it happening that it can get a little frustrating, where it feels like we're spinning a little bit, but you keep doing it, which is what we intend to do.
Yeah, and Jesse, I really appreciate that. And I mean, I know from watching from the sidelines and watching now being engaged in it as a council member and seeing some of the work that's been done and being done, really appreciate your efforts. And so as we're starting to head into the new year, what are some of the things that you see coming up? We got about 60 seconds here before we roll out the new into the break again. But what are some of the things that you've got on the top of your list as we head into 2025 to address?
Yeah, I appreciate it. I would just tell you guys, it's resources I worry about. You know, for me, not just the boots on the ground, those risking our lives, but even the federal prosecutors. So just to give you a feel and your listeners a feel, last year, I just got the numbers yesterday, we indicted almost 460 people, the most in like our state's history by far in the U.S. Attorney's Office. Last year, we set the record at 414. That was the beat the previous year by 60 people, so we're cranking, and we've lost people who just, you know, they've moved to other states and things come up, and I worry about the sustainability of the work if we can't get those positions filled. And then, you know, I know our partners are feeling that too, so that's top of mind for me. We can't do the work if we don't have the resources, so grateful when a budget is passed, and then we can see where the money is and proceed accordingly.
Well, that's fantastic. And again, Jesse, thanks for spending a half hour with us this morning to talk about the great work you're doing. From Jennifer and I, we're grateful for the work that you've done for the state of Montana. We'll be back after this break. Montana Talks. All right. Welcome back. You're listening to Montana Talks. We're going to jump in with our friend, Yellowstone County Commissioner Mark Morse, who's listening this morning. Mark, you're on with Scott and Jennifer. Good morning, sir.
Scott and Jennifer. How are you today?
Good morning.
We're doing great. You got us for the next 2.5 minutes during this segment. So what's on your mind, sir?
So, you know, I've heard you guys are talking about crime. And as Jennifer well knows, she's on the jail working group with me. You know, the city and county working collaboratively. We're on the way to building a short-term detention. We still appear to be on the timeline that it should be open the end of September, beginning of October 2025. That'll provide us somewhere between 50 and 90 additional beds for short-term detention. We will have an arraignment court with that. An arraignment court basically means it gives the police immediate power of arrest. And a person comes in for no more than 3 days. We get them hooked up with social services, drug counseling, GPS monitoring they may get released on. But the idea is that they see a judge within 1 day of arrest. And then they're launched into the criminal justice system. And then separate from that, we will be getting a jail master plan, the final report, probably the end of January, that will explain to people what the problems we have at the current jail facility, whether it's too small, what the number of beds should be for maybe the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, that's great. And Commissioner Morse, I certainly appreciate the work that you guys have done and the ability to collaborate with the county commissioners and the city council here over the last year. I know we're tackling some very tough stuff, and this jail situation is fortunately for the council and unfortunately for you, that's your baby. But it doesn't take the responsibility off the city council and the citizens, because our constituents are your constituents and vice versa, for us to collaborate and work towards a solution on that. And it feels like for the first time in a long time, we actually have a collaborative relationship to try to tackle these problems, because they're big for our community and they're wide ranging.
Yeah, I think it's really been tremendous, Commissioner Morse, the leadership that you've brought to the table in advocating for resources and focusing on the issues that matter, because we know this is a complicated solution. And it's been great to see us working together in the same direction.
Well, and I would reiterate that the council's been great to work with. And, you know, I really want your listeners to realize that they're a big part of what's going to happen going forward. Because while we will have done the hard lifting of figuring out what we need to make our criminal justice system work, at some point it will come to them.
All right.
In the form of a...
We're going to have to take a hard break. Montana Talks.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back to Montana Talks. You're on with Jennifer Owen and Scott Aspelander for the morning. So, kind of coming off of this criminal justice conversation that we had with U.S. Attorney Jesse Lazlevich, we're going to jump into another passion project for Councilwoman Owen and myself, the Family Justice Center, the first of its kind being built in Montana or founded in Montana. The Family Justice Centers are located across the U.S., and it's a model that was started up under the George W. Bush.
That's correct.
Administration in the early 2000s, started and founded out of San Diego, but has been wildly successful. This model has been wildly successful in addressing family violence.
Absolutely, helping, best practice.
Helping people escape, consolidating services in one location, and really bringing the support to those desperately in need to try to escape those situations and scenarios in our communities. And Billings, proud to say, is going to be the first Family Justice Center in Montana, and really plowing new ground for not only Billings, but for the state of Montana. And so we've got Taya Keith on, who is the... Taya, maybe you should tell us what your title is. You're kind of the do-all Swiss Army knife for the Family Justice Center at the moment. But good morning, Taya.
Well, good morning, Jennifer and Scott. I appreciate you guys having me here to talk. And, yeah, so this is the first one in Montana. And so Northern Lights is the name of the Family Justice Center here in Montana. And I am the coordinator for the Family Justice Center here. It is the first in Montana, which is pretty exciting. And the next closest, I think, is Nampa, Idaho. Uh-huh. But, yeah, there's over 150 Family Justice Centers, and we are we're excited. So do you want me to just kind of explain to everybody what it's about? Or
I think the goal here, and Jennifer, you jump in.
Sure.
The goal really with the Family Justice Center was to provide better services, more holistic wraparound services to those experiencing and escaping domestic violence.
That's right.
It is not to replace the YWCA.
No.
It's in fact a partner with the YWCA in expanding the level of services and assistance that we can provide to those most vulnerable in our community. And Jennifer,
I think what makes Family Justice Centers really exciting is we are organizing all of the services that people surviving domestic violence need under one roof. So, Taya, maybe you can talk a little bit about the work you've done. We've talked a lot this morning, Scott, about partnerships, about the need for local government, city, county, school board to work together. And really, that's the heart of the Family Justice Center, bringing Billings Police Department, Yellowstone County Attorney's Office, Billings City Attorney's Office, Social Services, YWCA, Angela's Piazza, everybody together under one heading to say, survivors, we're with you. We're going to fight alongside of you to prevent re-victimization, to get justice, to help your family stabilize, and to prevent children from falling into that same path. So, Taya, why don't you talk a little bit about the work you've done in building some of those community partnerships to bring them together under the Northern Lights Family Justice Center heading?
Sure. Yeah, it's exactly right. We're not creating anything new. Everything's already here. And I think that those services that are provided that are here already are phenomenal. But it's so hard because everyone's so siloed. They're in their own area and they do their thing. But we're really trying to bring the best of the best together, and so that those victims are, you know, wrapped up in a holistic way, so that they don't have to travel and seek those things out by themselves. We're doing it for them. And so my job as the Family Justice Center coordinator is bringing those services together and creating those relationships to where those services will all be in one location. And as of right now, we are actually located at the YWCA. So we are open and seeing people, victims, and so we're in the YWCA building on Wyoming, and we see people wherever they're at in their process. So if it's before something has happened, before there's an actual, you know, criminal case or anything like that, before there's been violence, but, you know, you can see that there's an unhealthy relationship, or maybe it's past and it's something that's happened and you're just looking for that next step of where to go and who to talk to. But victims come in and they will say, you know, this is where I'm at, and I don't really know exactly what I need. And then we go through the process. We do an intake, see what, you know, they've done already, see what type of danger they're in. And then from there we say, you know, it looks like these services would really benefit from. Is that something you're interested in? And really, it's their choice from that point of seeing what it is that they're feeling comfortable with doing at that time. And it's not a one and done thing either. It's definitely something that, you know, it's an ongoing process. And so a victim might be like, you know, I'm ready to talk to an attorney to see, you know, what the next step is. Or, you know, but I'm not quite ready to go through the counseling yet. They're still maybe in the thick of it. And maybe they are, but really it's trying to find those services where they're at and then continue through that process. And just like that, Jennifer, it's to be able to go through it with them and make sure that they don't get lost in the process and that they don't, you know, that they're not alone. Yeah. And, it's pretty exciting. I feel like,
This is the Fox News.
You know, again, not replacing or duplicating any programs, but just making sure that we take the existing resources, putting them together under one roof to eliminate that runaround.
Yeah.
And then providing that more access to the more coordinated services. And not only that, but the services themselves being able to, you know, talk to each other, to learn about each other, and make sure that the collaboration is together. And so that way it's really integration to the next level so that everyone understands how the other one works. And so, you know, if they even see a victim in the process and the victim wasn't ready at some point, you know, maybe one of those service providers can say, you know what, looks like you've really benefited from doing this. Have you looked into that? And they're like, yeah, I just wasn't ready. Like, just making sure that everyone's working together. And it is best practices.
Yeah. I really appreciate the work that you're doing and the ability to collaborate and work with you from the city council perspective. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've seen, I had the opportunity to go down to San Diego and stop in an established family justice center down in San Diego County, the North County facility in San Diego. And it was amazing to me. The people that work there, the collaboration that occurred with the different service providers, and the security and safety that these facilities provide those people who are looking to escape. And I think, Jennifer, the thing that's important for us to talk about is interrupting that generational.
That's exactly right.
That generational violence.
And I think that's a really important point. You know, we talk a lot about the services, and it's essential that family justice centers be responsive to survivors and where they're at, and everybody's path is different. But make no mistake about it, the city of Billings is serious about prosecuting these crimes, because that is what begins to interrupt these cycles. We know that children who grow up in violent homes are much more likely to be victimized or victimizers themselves. They experience observing domestic violence in the same way they would experience being attacked or assaulted themselves. So, Scott, you know, you and I worked together in the last budget cycle to add 2 dedicated domestic violence investigators to the Billings Police Department, in addition to the tremendous work of Officer Katie Nash, who's been investigating these for years. But we're serious about prosecuting these crimes. And at the same time, the Family Justice Center rests on this idea of balance. If you want to prosecute, we're going to be aggressive. If your journey is different, that's okay, too. And, Taya, maybe you could highlight a little the Voices Committee, the idea of Family Justice Centers really being...
We've got 30 seconds, Taya, so give us a quick one on the Voices group.
Sure. The Voices is a group of survivors that have been through it. They understand. They've been through all of it. The majority of them have kids and know, you know, just from a perspective of the victim, understanding, like, we want to stop the process. We don't want our kids to be either victimized or victimizers, you know. And that's the important part, understanding the process and wanting to stop that progression.
Taya, I really appreciate your time this morning and especially the work that you're doing for our community with the Family Justice Center here in Billings. Thanks for jumping on with us and talking about it. You're listening to Montana Talks.
This is the energy of electrification. Available Type S high performance variant, nearly 500 horsepower and 278 mile EPA range rating. Choose from our complimentary charging packages so you can charge how you want. The all-electric Acura ZDX. This is the energy of innovation. Acura, precision crafted performance. Count down to the new year in the all-electric Acura ZDX with $0 first month payment and $1 due at signing.
Fox News commentary.
Joe Biden has done a lot of damage the last 4 years, but he did one thing right when it comes to one of our nation's proudest symbols. I'm Tommy Lahren. Find out next.
Will Kane had you covered this election.
Brett Baer joins us now. Former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy joining us on The Will Kane Show. Tommy Lahren joins us now.
It's the new must-listen podcast in America.
I think you're right on. It is a funeral for the mainstream media.
I see a victory for Donald Trump. I see a victory for America.
The Will Kane Show. Listen and watch now at WillKaneShow.com. And catch it weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern at FoxNewsRadio.com and the Fox News app.
Moments of bipartisanship are rare, and so are things done by Joe that aren't complete disasters. So in the holiday spirit, here's something that satisfies both of those rarities. President Biden signed a bill officially designating the bald eagle as our national bird. The bill itself passed Congress unanimously, which is great news. I, for one, thought the bald eagle was already our national bird since it's been on our great seal since 1782, carries its own holiday, is designated the national emblem, and has its own protection act, but apparently it's never technically been deemed with the title. But now, the bald eagle has made its official debut as our national bird with this amendment to Title 36 of the U.S. Code. I'm glad that even though we have a very divided Congress and an absentee president in the White House, this important and historic move was etched into our proud history. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. Mainly sunny to partly cloudy today, high near 47. Tonight, mainly cloudy, low near 30. Lots of clouds on Saturday with a high near 49. Saturday night, cloudy, areas of rain and some snow, a low near 30. Areas of rain and some snow possible early on Sunday. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I'll tell you what, if you're going to be traveling this holiday season, whether it's on a plane, train, or an automobile, download the Montana Talks app. Not only can you listen live through the Montana Talks app, you'll see some of the web content, some of the news and commentary pieces that we share. But if you're traveling, you're in and out of coverage, you're sleeping in, you can download all 4 hours of Montana Talks. And there's going to be some great content. David Noble, Scott Aspen, Lighter, and more. Download the Montana Talks app on your phone.
New News Talk 970 and 103.3 FM KBUL. Your home for Fox/radio.
JabraEnhance.com/radio.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. This is where Montana talks.
All right, welcome back. You've got Jennifer Owen and Scott Aspenlighter sitting in for Aaron Flint today. Now we're going to get to an issue that workforce development with our veterans. And so we've got Leif Ibsen on the phone. And Leif, did I say your last name right? You and I have worked together, and I am not sure that I've ever got your last name right. And for a guy that has a terrible last name, I'm specifically sensitive to that. Oh, do we got Leif? Leif, are you on? Well, guess we don't have Leif. So we're going to talk about what...
Workforce development.
Yep. So Leif runs a program called... He's a skill bridge, a Department of Defense skill bridge navigator. So... Department of Defense has a skill bridge program in which they allow enlisted people mm-hmm. on the tail end of their enlistment to basically be detailed out to a private business. Department of Defense carries the tab on that. They pay 100% of the wages and the benefits and whatnot, but they get these people out into the private sector to get trained up. Get exposure to a different skill set in the hopes that it helps them transition out of their enlistment period right into the workforce. We use that skill bridge program to hire an engineering technician for my engineering company here in Billings. So maybe we got Leif now.
Let me see if I can get Leif back on line two here.
Leif, do we have you now?
I do, Scott. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Leif, for jumping on. Sorry, we got bungled up there, but we got a couple minutes, Leif. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about the work that you're doing in helping veterans transition out of their enlistment period here in Montana?
Okay. Yeah, great. Thanks, Scott. So there's a transition program, and you highlighted it a little bit as I was getting reconnected, called the SkillBridge program. But it lets service members in their last 180 days of active duty go and work for an employer like yourself, gain some on-the-job training, whether that's an internship, on-the-job, apprenticeships, anything like that. Anything that's a career industry is eligible for the SkillBridge program. And you have folks everywhere from, you know, your initial enlistment all the way to your 20 and 30-year career service members, whether they were, you know, enlisted warrant officers or officers. And in my experience, just in the last couple of years of being back in Montana, it's still a program that, as I talk to employers across the state, they don't realize that it exists, and then they don't know how they can access it or even how to really market to folks leaving active duty.
Which is exactly where I was in my business, trying to find veterans. We've had veterans on our team that have went back and used the GI Bill and got an engineering degree, right? But we've never hired and been able to find technicians, support staff, surveyors, those types of folks to come into the business. And it was actually Brian Gilman with Warriors in Quiet Waters and Blake Furman here with the Veteran Navigation Network that set me up with LAIF. So for our business, it worked out wonderfully. We brought on a Marine that was stationed out of Jacksonville, North Carolina, wanted to move out here because his fiance at the time was working at the hospital. We ended up having him for 90 days, which was shorter than I had hoped, but we hired him immediately. And not only did we hire Ryan, but Ryan just brought his friend from the Marine Corps. We just hired him too.
Amazing.
To move out here from New Jersey. So Leif, I really appreciate you jumping in. Sorry for the mix up on the call, but the SkillBridge program is a fantastic program. And Leif, maybe you can give us the name of your company.
Yeah, Montana Opportunities for Veterans Everywhere.
So Montana Opportunities for Veterans Everywhere. Leif can help you navigate that program. He helped me. It was wildly successful. I encourage you to look it up. This is Montana Talks. We'll be right back.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
In these days of culture wars, you commonly hear disdain for those who don't work. Those who use the social safety net to maintain an acceptable lifestyle that doesn't involve holding a job are rarely respected, yet their behavior may be perfectly rational. That's because of something economists call implicit taxes. What, you may ask, does a person or family actually receive by earning an additional dollar of wages? Because of the myriad of cash supplement, housing assistance, child care subsidies, and other safety net programs out there that are income-based, the answer may surprise you. There are so many rules to all these programs. Social Security alone has 27-28 primary rules. That perhaps would make it more surprising if it were otherwise. The thresholds where earning an extra dollar incurs a penalty or puts you in a different rate bracket are incredibly harsh. Start making money and those implicit taxes add up to a lot. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.